Before Coach Butch Jones was born, before Steve Spurrier threw his first visor as a football coach, Bobby Denton's voice was echoing in Neyland Stadium.
It's football time in Tennessee!
Hearing Bobby on game days has been an awesome Tennessee tradition, but knowing Bobby in person was the real honor and a blessing. For the next hour, we've assembled a group of Bobby's friends to share experiences and behind-the-scenes stories so that you can see why he was so special to so many. Sunday night, for the first time in 48 years, Bobby won't be in the PA booth. But we all know he'll be there in spirit, from a booth that's even higher. Orange on, cigar in hand, in classic Bobby style.
How about that, baby?
A little snippet of Bobby's personality there at the end. I think this is going to be a special hour. This is Andy and Allison from WIVK, and we're joined in the room here with Halloran Hilton Hill.
I am here.
That's
yes,
right.
Yes, he is.
Mickey Dearstone, who's going to find a microphone. And,
come here, Mickey. Come over this way.
I am here.
And also joined from with some special folks who have known Bobby for a long, long time. Bud Ford is here, and also Gus Manning. Morning, guys. How are you guys?
Hey.
Morning. Good to see you.
Glad to be here.
You know, we mentioned that a few minutes ago in the intro, and we've talked about it before, but the first time in 48 years that Bobby's voice is not going to be heard in the stadium from the booth. And most people who have been going to UT games have never been to a game where Bobby wasn't the PA announcer. I mean, that's an incredible statement.
That's right.
Yeah.
In fact, Bobby never missed a game.
He was always on time. He was there all
was
the time.
There?
He wasn't going to miss it being on the show, you know.
Exactly.
I think that's a little bit inaccurate. I edit you respectfully. You said he wasn't going to miss being on the show. Bobby was the show.
Exactly.
No question about that.
But, you know, I was telling folks that even after 48 years, it was Bobby's passion for UT athletics.
He's unbelievable.
The last year that he did it, last season, right up to the very end, he would always come early enough, park in that same lot, and not go anywhere until he watched the Vol walk. Yeah. Now, he has seen so many Vol walks, and I guess in a season they all look the same. Same players, same coaches. But it always thrilled him to watch the Vol walk.
Yeah.
Well, the truth of the matter is you can't sell something you don't believe in.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just a fact. And Bobby believed in the Vols, and he believed in all the people connected to his life. That was his legacy. Gus, do you remember when you met Bobby the first time?
Well, it was here at the station. I met him the first time, you know, when I was doing my program down here. You know, I've been down here on WIVK for, I think, 54 years, if that's that old.
Yeah.
But I met him down here, you know. Bobby was always upbeat, you know. He's always upbeat, and he enjoyed athletics. And I liked to used to be around him. And I liked to use, when he was the general manager, Haywood and I, would after we'd get through recording our program, we'd always go down in the office. First thing he'd say, "No, you're not getting any damn increase in salary."
Oh, man.
He'd tell us that every time we would.
I bet you he gave you an increase anyway. He liked to say no and do yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
But, Gus, what made you think that he could be a good PA announcer?
Well, you know, he worked on these tracks on the that's what he was doing the PA announcing at the
Talladega.
Well, he did Talladega.
Smoky Mountain Raceway.
Smoky Mountain Raceway. Yeah, he did all those, and he did a good job on those. And I knew he'd do a good job for us. So, actually, he didn't apply for the job. I just told him he had it and get out over there.
Of course, I knew Bobby back when he was doing Maryville Dragway. My brother-in-law, John Caldwell, and Bobby, they were, at one point, they were racing their cars. They were drag racing. That was a drag track. And one night, they said the announcer didn't show up, and so they let Bobby start doing the announcing at Maryville Dragway, and that's how he got into it. And then he went to Smoky Mountain with Don Naiman and ended up in Talladega. But he has a voice that is indicative of large venues.
Yeah, you're right.
And that's the key. Not all voices would work in Neyland Stadium. There's a huge echo situation that handles with that, and also the volume of your voice and the projection of your pronunciations, all those things factor into a good PA announcer, not just the guy that you think can do it. It's more than that. It's really a trickier job than you think.
I think we have that story in Bobby's words. That was the voice of Bud Ford. This is from my interview on Anything Is Possible.
How did you get the gig to begin with?
That's an interesting story. I was doing the Knoxville Bears had a semi-pro team here at Evans Collins Field, and I was doing the PA for that. And again, I'd never done football PA, so I started doing that. And then the opening came up because John Ward was going to do the broadcast after George Mooney and Bob Fox. He took a year off to do the TV show, put that together, and then he became the voice of the Vols on radio. And so Gus Main and Haywood Harris said, you should apply for the job. And I said, man, I'm not going to, that time they had like 72,000 seats. I said, I'm not going to embarrass myself in front of all those people. And so they said, well, apply for it. And I said, no. So they called one day and said, we have a lot of people trying to get this job. Are you not going to apply for it? And I said, no. Because I told you, I don't want to embarrass myself with those tricky Samoan names and all that, and have all those fans out there. Of course, more than that, listen to the radio every day, but they didn't see me, you know, just heard me. So Gus Manning called me one day, and he said, congratulations. I said, for what? He said, you've been selected by the committee of Haywood Harris and myself to be the new PA announcer at Neyland
Stadium. So they just selected you?
Yes.
And that's 42 years.
Yeah, and this will be the 42nd year. And so I told him, I said, I will do one game to see how I do. And if I think I can't do it or if I embarrass myself, then that'll be it. So the rest is history.
Now, my question for you, Gus, is that's Bobby's version of the story. Is that how it really happened on your
perspective? No, we gave him... I called him and told him, you got the job and get over here on time.
That must have been, what kind of conversations did you guys have when it came to that selection? I mean,
we didn't have much. We knew we was going to get him. He was a man for the job, you know.
Yeah.
He not only had trouble with names, he had trouble with names of names. Well, that piece of Samoan. He added a Y in there somewhere.
Samoans.
He'd have a hard time this week because there's 15 Polynesian players.
Well, I think one of the great things about Bobby in the stadium, at least as far as a fan and I'm sitting in the stands goes, is the character that because it's hard to transmit or communicate any kind of character or personality through making stadium announcements, and yet he found a way over the years to do that, whether it be with a simple name mispronunciation, or one of my favorite things was always, you know, so-and-so at the Hof, and he would always, and people loved to hear that because that was just a identifying Bobby thing that he did, and I think that's one of the things that made him special.
But do you think he was trying to create Bobby-isms?
I think they happened. He wasn't trying. That was just, you know what I'm saying? That was just Bobby.
Those were created earlier on. He just carried them with him. But, you know, Bud, I wanted to ask you, because you've been in just about every stadium across the country, and there's one thing I hate in a football stadium, and that's a cheerleader on the mic, a cheerleader, a PA announcer. Bobby had a way of being a homer without being a cheerleader,
yeah,
didn't he?
Well, I think you're right about that, but he had a uniqueness. You know, there is a personality once you get in that position. And one of the best things was we had certain security announcements that you had to make, and we had announcements we always felt like it was important to give what the concession prices were. Because that way someone in the stands would actually know what they should pay.
Right.
You had a lot of people vending then. And so Bobby kept reading, and he said, we got to put something into this, you know, and that's when he put in the pay these prices and please pay no more, because he was trying to draw attention that you should be listening to this announcement and those type things. But certainly all that's a part of it. And Haywood, was the straight consummate, because Haywood at that time also did basketball PA. And he understood that you can't get involved with the game so much. You can't allow your emotions of wanting your team to win. You have to be straightforward in fairness. And so he'd keep after Bobby to keep Bobby in line. And each time before the game, they would always meet and go over pronunciations. Well, Haywood was perfect with pronunciation. And Bobby would say, well, I hope that guy doesn't get in the game or something like that. and there were some unusual games, but Haywood would stress to Bobby, now Bobby got to be on top, you know, be careful here. Let's don't get too carried away. But Bobby had a way to do those things, and that turned his personality to where fans heard him and saw him. You know, he was known more by voice than he was by face from Tennessee standpoint. Right. And people would see him in different places. They'd hear that voice. They'd turn around and said, oh, you're that guy. You're that guy on a PA, aren't you? Yeah. And then he would start talking to him. But his voice was very distinctive.
Does that job pay a lot?
No, it doesn't pay a lot. There is a pay to it. He made sure he got his pay, but it wasn't that much of a job. But we raised it along the way. How much was when they first started? You remember, Gus?
I don't, but it wasn't lucrative.
there were those times, I know, over the years where Bobby did at least get right up to the line and maybe crossed it just a little bit. I know some of those stories, like the fourth in the river, or and that right. story. Tell that one. Let's get that clip so people know what we're talking about here real quick. I think Chris has got
pass out of bounds, incomplete, third and the river.
I understand. Somebody tells me that you went running down the hall that day to him, Bud, to say, what's going on down here?
Well, he had a, you know, I went down and I said, I went down to Gary Wine at the time was his spotter.
Right.
Because Bobby had several people that helped him spot. He also usually had a couple of other folks in there. I don't know if they were spotting for him or not, but he had an entourage. And they'd be, so I go down there and I'm talking to Coach Wine. I said, Coach Wine, tell Bobby he can't say that. And Bobby looked over at me and says, well, it's too late now. I've already said it. And I said, Bobby, come on. You can't be saying that. But, you know, he would, from time to time, we would have to kind of draw him back in. And, but he never really was far off, but because on that particular play, it was third in the river. I mean, it was a long way.
You know, for how long, and I don't know whether there still is or not, I know in the last few years Bobby wore a headset because there's a delay. And I think I did a freshman game or something a long, long time ago.
Right.
And it's something that people don't realize, that when he talks, about a second or two later, it comes out of the speakers.
Yeah.
Right. And for the person on the microphone, that's hard to get used to, but that never gave Bobby any problems.
No, it didn't. And part of the issue was that in the different building of the stadium and the expansions of the stadiums, you kept tying in these different PA systems, you know, different speakers here and there. And it was really difficult to manage those where they would all come the same time, and the distance too. I mean, speakers on the east side were pretty far away from where you were on the west side. So part of that, all part of that zone was in there. And so the second thing that happened later, you know, we began to incorporate the Jumbotron. And when we incorporated the Jumbotron, that was more difficult for Bobby because he was used to basically having the floor, so to speak, and handle it. And then you had to be cautious, and that's where the headset part of it came in, was to say, well, we got a spot on the Jumbotron, Bobby, don't say anything here, or, you know, you got to do this one live. We got this one on tape. He did some tape in with that Jumbotron to make it easier in some fashions, but it's more difficult than people think. There's at least seven people in that booth that are coordinating, spotting, directing, and watching what's going on. And certainly the reverberation of your voice is a major thing. And Jeff can talk about that because he did the band when he was doing the band. He had the same feeling about that.
Gus, do you remember any complaints about Bobby?
I had plenty of them. But I never did pay attention to any of them.
And why was that? Why did Bobby could mess up, but there was never a thought, you're going to be fired, you're going to be canned. But what was it about Bobby that made you accept him, even if he was making mistakes? That's our guy.
it was just Bobby. You know, if you knew Bobby, he was Bobby, and you're not going to change anything with him, you know. He'd have that old cigar chewing on it, you know, and you'd say something to him, and he'd act like he's about to swallow the cigar, but we didn't worry about complaints.
You know, you mentioned the cigar, and anybody who knows Bobby knows that was part of his personality. When you saw him, that either he had one with him in his mouth or somewhere nearby. And I know that at one time in the booth that he could actually have a cigar pair and he'd smoke and everything. Then they changed it to a non-smoking stadium. What reaction did that cause? I've always wondered how Bobby must not have reacted.
But he just kept chewing on them.
You have to remember that the guy who hired Bobby, Gus Manning, was also a cigar guy. So both of them had a problem. They were both chewing on him.
Bobby knew if he brought Gus one, that Gus would leave him alone, and he could have a cigar.
Joining us on the line this morning is Phil Williams. Good morning, Phil.
The cigars are they're Flora de Olivas. And I'll be having one after the probably before and after the game tonight. You know, I was listening to Bud and Andy. At the end of that story of third in the river, we were talking about it the other day. And in the press conference or post game, they asked Lou Holtz, "So did it bother you when the PA?" One of the reporters asked him, "Did it bother you when the PA announcer said third in the river?" He said, "No, I thought it's farther than that." but you know, and we were talking the other day, this is going to be, even Jeff, who's taking over, it's going to be his first game in that stadium without Bobby Denton. I remember getting in the press box one time and somebody handed me a piece of paper because I was just watching Bobby part of the entourage, as y'all were talking about. I handed Bobby the piece of paper and he looked at it. And back then it was, everybody had beepers. You know, this was a long, long time ago. He took a piece of paper, "Doctor number 264, call your exchange." And you can remember those announcements going through Neyland Stadium. So I started writing stuff down on pieces of paper and handed it to him. You know, "Doctor number 266, call your wife." And he turned around and he goes, "Whams, damn it." So anyway, you knew he was a little angry when he called you your last name. But he did that.
Hey, Phil, I kind of thought you were one of his spotters, but now you really let the real news out, right?
I was probably spotting other things, you know. That was back in the quote-unquote day. But one of the things, too, Bobby was he was a proud guy. He was so proud of Tennessee. He was proud of doing things like putting Andy and Allison together. He was always just proud of that. But I think the last time Mickey Dearstone and I talked on the air about this, the thing Bobby may have been most proud of, and I think this needs to be said, 8 year sobriety. Man was awesome. And I think you have to remember him that way. And I think that is a tremendous feat, maybe above anything else.
Yeah, let's go. We've got a clip of that, actually, Bobby talking about his sobriety. This is Bobby Denton.
At one time, alcohol got in my life, and I was able, through the 12-step program, to stamp that out. If anything stood in my way, it was my personal habits. And to overcome that was one of the biggest achievements that I've ever had, and one of the things I'm most proud of.
What do you tell people about that? What do you tell people that struggle with the bottle? What do you tell them?
There's nothing good can come out of it. Not one thing good can come out of it. Nothing, nothing, nothing. I used to think it gave you became more creative. But you really become more stupid and embarrass yourself. But it's a disease. It's a dreadful disease. I know friends that die every day from it.
That's real.
Yeah,
And maybe that's the essence of why Bobby was so universally loved, is because he was real. He let you see it all. I mean, he was a real guy.
Gus, during that time that Bobby was drinking, did that ever become an issue with you and the people at UT?
No, never did. He was always in good shape when he came. He wasn't good shape sometimes when we had the big shows down at the Civic Auditorium. When he was the master of ceremonies down there, God Almighty.
Because I'm thinking that his sobriety was probably his biggest accomplishment, and I would say doing the PA was right there behind it at number two.
He always is. Shindigs, he didn't.
I think the one thing that about that, you know, Bobby accepted the PA role as a tremendous responsibility, and he realized that that was a dependence on the university was dependent on him, the fans were dependent on him, and he accepted that. In that role, he never got himself above that job, if you know what I'm saying. He always knew, I've got to do this, we need to do this right. And even though we'd kid him about pronunciations or whatever, it did bother him when he mispronunciated or ran into an issue because he took it with such a deep responsibility that he needed to do it. Although he loved it, it was a serious job to him.
I don't think you can, I didn't mean to cut you off, but I don't think you can establish any type of tradition without consistency.
Yeah.
And I don't think you can establish a real tradition if you don't understand that tradition is meant to last beyond you. It is a baton, and you have to hand it off. And Bobby was very respectful of the fact that there had to be that consistency, and it had to be such that it could be handed off because it was going to outlive him. He knew that. He got that in a big way.
He never called in sick either, did he? Did he ever miss a game?
God, no. He never called in sick. He's too big a ham.
I think there were times maybe that Haywood might have been a little concerned when it'd be about 10 minutes before the game and we quite hadn't seen him yet, but then he was always there. No, he never did. The only thing, when he moved to Florida, he stopped doing the orange and white games in the spring because he didn't want to come back, but there was no doubt that once the season began that he was going to be in Knoxville here for every one of the games. And I don't think he missed a regular season game, but I think several people did a couple orange and white games, and then and Mickey, I guess, did a couple of those along the way. And so, but certainly for every game, home game of the regular season, he was going to be there.
Kind of gives you an idea on how well I did, doesn't it?
By the way, good morning, everybody. If you're just tuning in, let me tell you what you're listening to. We are paying tribute to Bobby Denton, former general manager and vice president of Dig Broadcasting. He probably hired or fired everybody in this room right now. And we are celebrating his legacy. He passed away earlier this year. He would have been the announcer. In just a little while, you will meet the man that is next in line to do that work, Jeff Jarnigan, because I was about to say take his place. Jeff doesn't even want to take his place. You can't take Bobby's place. By the way, our phone lines are open as well, and if you have Bobby stories, if you remember being in Neyland Stadium listening to Bobby Denton do the announcing, call us 656-8255, 1-800-951-8255. #987 is a free call for customers of U.S. Cellular.
Guys, Bobby told me that his goal was to do it 50 years, and one thing he was really looking forward to was doing the PA at Bristol Motor Speedway for the Virginia Tech game when that takes place up there. Did he ever talk to you about any of that?
No, he never did, and, you know, he never did discuss that with me.
The phrase that everybody is familiar with, the football time in Tennessee phrase that everybody looks so forward to every year that kind of gets everybody in that riled-up mood and spirit and everything. Gus, tell us how did all that come about? I think we got that in Bobby's words, too, but I want to hear from you.
Let's hear his story first.
Let's see which one we want to believe.
Which one now?
The football time in Tennessee and how that all came about. When
who started It's football time in Tennessee?
Well, I think he did.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was the originator of that.
Let's listen to his version of the story.
Yeah.
Let's talk about announcing at Neyland Stadium. When did that start? Because you started this, it's football time. Did you start that?
Well, it's a debate between John Ward and myself, but we start every game. It's football time in Tennessee. So I would say that happened over the PA, but John Ward also did it on the broadcast, so we'll both take credit for it, I guess.
He said it's a debate, right?
Yeah, right.
He didn't say I started it. He said it's a debate.
that would probably be one of the in football college stadiums across the country, one of the most well-known phrases, I guess, maybe ever. Bud, can you? Because you're at all the stadiums. Well, and nobody else has anything like that, do they?
You know, every school has some kind of moniker or something right. like that that they start off with. I think ours, you know, knew that at that particular point in time, now here we're ready for the game because our people get there early. They come in the stands early. So they're waiting for when is the start of what's going to happen. And that was it. Bobby coming on the air. And from that point on, we're getting ready to play football. And I think that was uniqueness. He and John will both claim it. I think the debate is there. Whoever, if you're talking to John, John's going to say he did it first, and Bobby's going to say, well, I'm the loudest, or and I did it next. But I think those were the unique things in the tradition part of it. And it is part of the tradition. Traditions are born at some point in time, whatever they are. And when Bobby started that and continued it, then that became the way we do it. And certainly the concession prices. Now, Gus, you might add about the concession prices. At one time, Gus was in charge of almost everything in the athletic department. And part of that was concession prices. And so part of what was happening, we had a lot of young vendors, as I mentioned earlier. And so they'd go through the stands and people would, you know, maybe pass down money and they wouldn't know exactly what it was or if they got back change. And Gus says, well, we got to be sure they know what these are. So talk about that, Gus.
Well, that's when he got in and pay these prices and pay no more. You know, that was one of his sayings every game. He didn't miss that because he was getting free Cokes and free food.
This is Bobby Denton saying those words.
Today's concession prices are posted at each stand. We urge you to pay these prices and please pay no more.
And I heard it was because there were some vendors who were kind of gouging. Is that what was going on?
No, I just think that people, maybe there's a $20 bill goes down the line and no change comes back, you know? and I think Gus and I, we would get some, you know, what is a Coke supposed to be? And so it became more of an information flow. Then you had the program, we printed in the program and a lot of other things, but it became a significant point. This is what you're supposed to do at a football game.
So people who don't know Bobby personally, that phrase became such part of him that he even made it his tag there for a while.
Right.
It was his license plate.
Right, that's right.
You have to steal it. Pay no more.
Pay no more. That's right.
So coming up in just a moment, we get to talk to Jeff Jarnigan. I did want to ask you, through the years, when it came to stadium announcing, did it change? Are audiences, are fans changing in terms of the information that they want to receive when they're in the stadium, given the fact that everybody has a smartphone, everybody has all this technology? Has the announcing protocol and experience changed?
I would say that the homerism has changed in PA. Normally the PA guy was not a part of the game. He was doing a job. And then as time went on, the PA announcers at certain schools, and I won't allude to who they are, I think they violated what that PA guy is supposed to do. I think they got beyond. They became entertainment. They became rousing up their team at one point in time and not doing the same for the other. We traditionally stress the importance of a neutrality from that PA thing. I think the Jumbotron and the vision aspects that every team came in, certainly the band had to coordinate that as well. And, you know, we've heard some conversation about how the band felt about it. So there was a real change there in what the fans were seeing and what they were viewing. And a lot of times they were seeing replays and didn't need words. You know, sometimes a picture is worth 1,000 words, and it was better not to say anything at certain times. And I think Bobby saw that pretty well in what he was doing. But it has changed. I think there's a higher demand that's coming because of this increase in trying to enthuse your crowd, trying to get your crowd up. And I don't really think it was always a responsibility of the PA announcer, but there are people that are approaching that. The high schools are doing it now. I went to a high school game last night, and high schools are into it, and that's part of this entertainment factor that you're talking about, and technology as well.
But see, I can remember Bobby in some, maybe a big game like an Alabama or something like that. If it was an exciting game, Bobby always, instead of what he said, it was how he said it. And you could almost stand outside the stadium and tell how the game was going on just from his PA announcements. But I remember times to where he put a lot of emphasis on the opposing team's touchdowns if it was a close game or overtime or something like that, because he was actually in the game. And I think that that's very unusual. You know, they always say in radio, when you're doing play-by-play on radio, you paint a picture. I think Bobby was about the best at painting a picture on the PA, and I think that takes talent that a lot of people don't have in stadiums across the country.
And he never was a cheerleader on the PA.
No.
Never.
Now, he would emphasize words more, like Tennessee, and right. And you could tell if there was an interception or a fumble recovery, you know, first and, you know, he'd say first down Tennessee, and he would draw it out. So, you, I mean, you always knew that. Mm-hmm. But he never was doing anything really to get the crowd up. It's just that's how he felt when something like that happened.
Exactly right.
Did he interact with the other stadium announcers? Like when you guys had road games, this is a question I've never asked. Did he ever travel and did he mingle with the other stadium announcers?
Not that I know of, but he certainly knew all of the SIDs of all the schools because the opponent – SID would come to Bobby and help him with pronunciation, specific things they were doing. Sometimes they might even allude, we are going to run this certain kind of play. You're not going to watch for it. I mean, they gave him information, so he was well aware of all those things that they, you know, people around the league. But I don't know that he actually, you know, mingled with the other PA announcers. The one thing that happens in a game, and sometimes we lose sight, sometimes your opponent makes a better play than you do. And it's not always a mistake on your team's part that this other play went the other way. And I think that's what Mickey's talking about. If there was a great play made by another team and, you know, opponent team, they make a tremendous interception or a punt return or something like that. Bobby was good to, as you say, emphasize what that play was because every play results in some type of good or bad. And sometimes you can make a great play and they make a better. And I think Bobby understood that about the game as well.
Did he ever have any, because to hear Bobby talk, you know, he'd come back, well, I was talking to coach whoever it was at the time or this person at the time, tell him, here's what you should do, whatever. To hear him tell, he had a great deal of influence on what went on over there sometimes. I'm curious. I'm half joking, but I'm curious, did he ever have any influence on stuff like that? And because he was a creative guy.
Well, you know, he and Johnny Majors were big buddies, yeah. And I've heard him tell Johnny what he should be doing.
So he was telling us the truth. They might not listen, but he was telling them, you know?
Oh, yeah. He was always telling.
Where's the bathroom? Where's the bathroom in that box? I asked Jeff Jardigan yesterday. Once you start the game, you really can't. You got to be right there, actually.
Actually, it's the closest place you can get to. It's right outside the door.
Amen.
And we had that for the public address announcement.
Well, it came a lot easier when you started playing TV games and they took 3-minute timeouts. Oh, yeah. So, but he always looked forward to the band announcer coming in because during halftime he would have, you know, 7-8-10 minute break or longer because the band would be performing, the opponent band, and so he'd get a break at that time. But obviously, once the game's going on, there weren't many breaks unless he was quick.
Did Bobby ever have visitors in the box observing him?
Well, he...
What are you laughing about?
Yeah, Mickey's laughing about it.
Well, what would happen is, first off, I recall how he would say, okay, we sort out our press tickets each year, and they're for a booth, and he has his passes and his parking, and first time, you know, he would say, well, let's say I got 3 passes for Bobby Denton. And, you know, he spotted or whatever. And then the next year he said, well, we got 5 passes for Bobby Denton. And I said, well, who else working here? He says, I don't know and don't ask. Now, you have to know on the other side, you know, Gus loosely mentioned that he had been on the air 54 years and with his locker room show. And that show is still done. It'll be heard tomorrow, I guess, Gus. And with that show, Bobby was the guy that kept him on the air. So Haywood and Gus were always making sure Bobby's happy because they didn't want to get kicked off the air.
Mutually assured destruction. Right. I love that. Phil Williams has a question. Phil?
Yes, I do. And then I apologize. I have to run out of tea time. But how many, and Jeff Jarring is going to come in, by the way, and do a fine job. is a great choice.
He's a great
prior
guy.
To Bobby, did John Ward not do the PA? And how many announcers, how many PA announcers have been there in their names?
Well, Bill J was the old WNOX announcer, and he did the PA. He was the first guy that really did the PA. Bill J of WNOX.
And did not John Ward and some others do it?
Yeah, John Ward did it some. We haven't had too many.
and that's just to my point. That's elite company. And someone mentioned that perhaps Lindsey Nelson may have done a game or two.
We never have fired any of them. Let's put it like that.
Hey, Phil, did you ever think about applying for it?
It crossed my it crossed my mind, but. There are other people who are, I mean, hey, I'm a fan and I think I could do it, but, I don't know. It crossed my mind, but, I don't know. I just, I enjoy being there, watching the game. If Jarnigan ever got sick or something, I'd love to fill in, but I wouldn't, you know.
I'd check my food, Jim.
Well, yeah, or Andy, you know, there are a lot of qualified folks out there. I guess Hal, I could ask you the same question.
No, not at all. Yeah. Not at all. Okay. No, I'm not the
I'll lie and say no. But, I mean, here again, you know, I think it would be a dream job, and I think that Mr. Jarnigan is going to take it seriously. I like the way he's handled this with a lot of class. And Bobby Denton is, Bobby Denton's never going to die in the hearts of Tennessee fans. I'll just tell you that right now.
Hey, Phil, great talking to you this morning.
All right, guys. Go Vols.
All right.
There you go.
He's going to play golf.
Let's go ahead and bring in Jeff now.
Jeff Jarnigan.
Yeah, big shoes to fill. And I know anytime something like this happens, it's kind of it's a job you want to do, but not under the circumstances, I know. But big shoes to fill. Jeff, talk about that, and welcome in, by the way.
Thank you very much. It's absolutely – well, they're shoe boxes. They're not shoes. They're bigger than shoes. You come in behind somebody who's done it as long as he's done it, and the success he's had and as beloved as he is with fans. I mean, it's daunting. It is absolutely daunting. And – you know, my goal is just to not go in and do something that would tarnish what he's built, because that's very important to me. And I have the utmost respect for Bobby. Worked in the booth with him for 12 years and was in the booth when Bud came in on Third and a River and witnessed that with my own eyes. That was fun. One of my favorite stories. And, you take that seriously. I think you have to. And, Bobby took it serious, and he paved the path on how to do this.
Well, talk about the selection process for a minute. What did you go through? I know people are curious because when we all heard the news with Bobby after, of course, a time, we were like, well, how are they possibly going to find somebody to do that? And what was that like? Tell us that.
We had a tryout, and there were six or seven different people that we took us in the booth and put a TV up, had spotters there, and we did the pregame announcements, some of the awards, timeout scripts, and then did the fourth quarter of the South Carolina game last year. On this feed, it had no times, no scores, no anything, so it was like you were really watching a game. And it's a little bit surreal because you're looking at an empty stadium behind it, and then when you make the announcement in a game, the band plays, people cheer, all these things happen, and you would say, it's 3rd and 7. You just sit there for 30 seconds. Yeah, it's really weird. I told him, I said, that's harder than like the orange and white game or something, because at least there's activity and things. It would just seem like it was like nothing. And a radio guy, silence is our enemy. When it goes silent, we're going, whoa, what's wrong? And so it was against every fiber of my being to sit there and let that stay silent. But that's what you actually do in real time when you're doing a game.
Who sat there and watched and listened to you? I mean, I got to imagine it's a who's who of people, maybe. I don't know.
I know Athletic Director Hart heard it. I know his wife heard it. She told me at Butch Jones barbecue, she said, we were traveling somewhere, and she said, we were listening to all these entrants, and I really liked how you sounded. And she was very, very nice. And Mr. Hart called me and at home after the announcement was made, and he was very nice. And we had a long talk about Tennessee traditions, and I know there are some people out there that ding him with that, but I'm telling you, he rattled them all off. He knew every one of them. He could tell you about every one of them, and I was very impressed. I was very impressed with the man. I've yet to actually meet him like that, other than a basketball game for a second, but since it's played out. But that phone call was impressive with what all he knew.
What time do you have to be at the stadium tomorrow?
I'm going right after the show right now. after all this talk about Bobby being on time, I may just sleep there. I'm not exactly sure. I will be very early. I can tell you that.
Let me ask you, this is going to seem like an odd question. What do you wear? Is there a dress code?
There is for basketball. We wear coats and ties because we're on the side court there, and we're on TV a lot and those kind of things. I will be dressed appropriately. I'm going to have a sport coat and those kind of things on. I think if you're in that setting and in that venue, being dressed professionally, I think you act more professionally and you approach it more professionally. So I will definitely do that.
My understanding is there will be some use of Bobby's voice tomorrow. Is that correct?
That is my understanding, and I certainly have advocated that. As Mickey said a few minutes ago, Bobby was pretty outspoken about wanting to make 50 years, and I think it would be appropriate for us to get him to 50 with his announcements in the stadium and what we can do, and I am a proponent of that, and I believe that's what's going to happen. I don't know that it will happen, you know, right at kickoff and you hear that, but I'm sure that you're going to hear Bobby in the stadium tomorrow.
Yesterday morning, you told me about something special you're doing with a cigar.
I buy my cigars same place that Bobby always did. And the funny thing is, we bought them for years, same place, never once crossed paths in there, which is really kind of odd.
That's over, when you buy a lot at one time.
Over 20 years, yeah, Bobby bought a truck in there and bought them.
Do I?
You say you bought them?
I didn't say Bobby bought them. I said I bought them. Bobby and I don't walk on the same path, brother. Let me tell you, Bobby's a couple steps above me on that deal. But I went in and I was telling the gentleman there. I said I'd like to buy one of the cigars that Bobby bought, and I'm going to have it in the press box with me. And he looked it up and he said, "All right, found that." And so he got it for me. And the gentleman's name's Doug Weaver, that works at Smoke and Joe's, and that's, you know, I buy them there. Like I say, buy them there all the time. And he asked me what I was going to do with it, and I told him, I said, I'm going to have it in the booth with me. I'm going to lay it across the mic. I'm going to have it sitting there all season, and then after the last home game this year, I'm going to smoke it. And he said, would you mind if I bought it? I mean, this man only knew Bobby from a business standpoint, okay? I mean, we knew him as friend and those kind of things, but this person really knew him as somebody who came in and bought cigars. But it touched him enough to do that. He wanted to do that for Bobby, and I thought that was just awesome for that guy to do that. So I am going to have it up there all year, and I've got it on me right now. I've been carrying it around quite a bit, and it means a lot to me. I mean, it means a lot to me. I was in the booth with him for 12 years, and Bobby was great to me. We fought like cats and dogs Monday through Friday over radio ratings. I mean, you guys know how we do, and it's not personal. It's business, and Bobby always looked at it that way too, and we'd get in the booth, and it was like we were next-door neighbors. I mean, he would come on in, let me make some room for you, move my stuff, and you can get your stuff in. And then at halftime, when I would be doing the band, and he was taking full advantage of his 7 minutes or 8 minutes or whatever it was as we were talking about, he would always bring me back a creamsicle. 12 years. I think he was trying to fatten me up or something. I don't know. But he would always bring it back, and you know, the band sounded good. You know, I love what you do. I mean, he was the quintessential Southern gentleman in that setting, and I will never forget that, and I am eternally grateful for what he did, because he could have made that a very tough environment too as competitors, and he'd never considered that.
I want to go back to what you're going to wear. He had these orange slip-on shoes that I think would look real good on you, Jeff. And you need to get you a Tommy Bahama shirt or an Orvis shirt. He liked to shop at those two places, mm-hmm. Preferably with a lot of orange in it, and I think you'll be just fine.
I'm not worried about having enough orange. People, since this thing's happened, people have been just giving me orange stuff. I mean, it's been, which I had a lot of already, but that won't be a problem. There'll be an appropriate amount of orange on. And I am a fan. I mean, as you talked about Bobby, I am. I mean, first game I ever saw, Bobby Scott was quarterback, played Army. I mean, I've told this story a bunch of times. But, I mean, and it was Bobby on the speakers. I mean, I said on Halloran's show yesterday, I mean, I'm 54 years old. When that comes out of those speakers tomorrow, that will be the first time at a home game that I've heard anyone else do it. So it's surreal for me. I mean, doing the orange and white game the week he passed, I have to tell you, was the strangest vibe I've ever felt walking in that PA booth and all the times I've done it. Because you walk in there, and of course, it wasn't my position at that point. Nobody knew what was going to happen. But you walk in there, and you just know that that's gone. And it was incredibly surreal. And will be tomorrow. I guarantee it will be tomorrow.
I guess you have to feel the pressure, obviously. I mean, I don't necessarily say you're nervous about it, but that moment when you crack the mic the first time or when kickoff happens, have you thought about that? Are the words already formed in your mind? You know exactly what you're going to say? I mean, have you thought, what are your thought process?
I know what I'm supposed to say, and I hope that's what comes out. I'm a lot of things. It's an odd dynamic because I'm excited. I'm sad. The same time, I'm numb. When I got the call that day, I mean, I picked the phone up and they said, okay, we'd like to officially offer it. I mean, I stood there for about 20 seconds and couldn't speak, you know, it's like, wow. That's when it got real, you know, it's a concept before that. So I am, I'm humbled. I mean, I feel a lot of pressure more than performance anxiety, more than any of that. I feel, a duty to get as close to the level that Bobby brought to the booth as I possibly can. And I don't have visions of being Bobby by any stretch because there's only one Bobby and that would be a horrible mistake to try to do that. But I don't want to do anything that would embarrass what he has done all those years because he took it serious. He showed up prepared. Bobby told me a joke one time about we were going over, it was talking about the Samoans. Is that what you're saying? It was Peyton's first start, and he's going down the list, and it's Hawaiians, and it's Samoans, or Samoans, and all that. He's looking at it, and I'm getting ready to do the band, and he looks over at me, and he says, Jarnigan, there ain't a Smith or Jones on their whole team. and I said, I bet there will be by the third quarter. And he said, you're darn right there will be. I mean, he would never actually do that. He was just kidding. But I mean, he that's the kind of vibe he always had in the booth. He had a good time doing it. I will say that. He always had a good time and hated to lose. Man, that guy hated to lose.
Yeah. I think more than hating to lose, he loved winning, mm-hmm. but he loved what winning did for the people around him. If he was in your corner, he was in your corner. You couldn't have a better friend. But he had the graciousness to treat even competitors with great dignity and respect. Even the people that competed against him liked him. They may not have liked him in the heat of battle, but they liked Bobby the person. And that's something we all bore witness to. And when I think about major college sports and I think about the University of Tennessee, when you look at how fractured America is and when you look how fractured the world is, on these 8 Saturdays in downtown Knoxville, everybody's the same color, everybody has the same spirit, and you're watching a community come together. The traditions actually are the mortar between the bricks. It's the traditions that hold all of that together. Bobby understood that he was part of the mortar, not the bricks. And so he wanted to provide a consistency and a character that allowed people to come together and enjoyed that. That's probably his seminal quality, was he had an amazing ability to get people in a room and make them connect and bring them together and work together as a team to win. And that's he took that everywhere he went. He did it in the box. He did it with Dreamsicles. He won you over. You're his competitor. You are competing against us in radio, and you couldn't hate the guy.
No, there's no way. Oh, right? No. There's absolutely no way. He was as nice to me as if we'd been related or something. I mean, I have nothing but respect and love for the man.
It takes a special man to be like that. not to be petty.
Jeff, you said you guys always had an exchange about being competitors in the booth when you came up there. Tell us that story real quick.
Every year, 12 years, when he would come in, it started the very first year. He walked in, and at that point, you could have the lit cigar, and he came in, you know, in a cloud of smoke and a big entrance, and Bobby loved a big entrance. And he would come in, he'd look at me, and I'd be looking at my band script at the time, and he'd say, "Jarnigan." I'd say, "Yes, Bobby." And he'd say, "When you going to come work for a real radio station?" And my response for 12 years was the same. "Bobby, you've never once offered me a job." That was our exchange. And in later years, people would be sitting in there waiting on it. "Where's Bobby? When's he getting in here?" And it became its own little mini tradition in the booth.
What do you think, if Bobby could talk to you now, would he say to you about taking the job? What advice might he give you? I mean, that might seem like an odd question.
My guess is from knowing him as I did, that he would say, "Do your best, be honest with the fans, and don't look back." You know, Bobby was more of a future guy than a past guy. Any time I ever dealt with him, and I think he would look to the future, and I think he would really look at the Butch Jones thing and be bright about it. I can tell you that. I mean, I think we all are. But I think he would be encouraging and supportive. I mean, that's just the way he was. I don't have any doubt that he would be.
We wish you the very best. We'll all be rooting for you.
Except for Phil, apparently.
I'm saying, watch what you eat and drink around Phil.
He did ask me to go have a cigar. I'm kind of wondering about that now.
He wants to
I'm going to bring my own, I can tell you that.
He wants to fill in. Allison is in the room with us, and we haven't talked to Allison.
I'm just enjoying the story.
We haven't talked to Allison. Allison, why don't you move over to this microphone, and I would love to give you an opportunity for you to reflect on Bobby as a boss, but you also are a UT fan as well.
Oh, yeah. I'm a big tailgater. That's my thing when I go to the game. I love to tailgate and go to the games. And I would always tailgate with Bobby right before he would go up into the booth. He always invited me over, and we would sit there and have, you know, something to eat, something to drink, and just kind of talk about, you know, just life. He was a great guy. Love that man. And I remember when I first moved here, my son was 13, and I was interviewing for the job, and my son did not want to move. He's 13. He had friends in Charlotte, North Carolina. And then I had lunch with Bobby, and Bobby won my son over, and we walked out of there with all kinds of UT shirts and hats and things like that. And my son said to me, "When can we move to Tennessee, Mom?" And it was because of Bobby. What? I mean, instant-like.
What did he say to your son, Christopher? How did he turn that deal? Because he's a great salesman.
Well, my son's a big basketball player at the time, and he said, "I'm going to send you," at the time Jerry Green was the basketball coach, "we're going to send you to Jerry Green's basketball camp, and we're going to make it just a great place for you to live. You're going to love it here, son." And it was the best move I ever made.
It was I'll just interject and say, when Alice and I moved here, this little testimony to how Bobby was just such a great guy and changed our minds too, because it was a big move. We had never teamed together before. Moved here, moving our families for the first time for me, a big decision. And I'll be honest, coming to a station like Wibbeck, I was terrified.
We were terrified. Yes,
yeah,
we were.
We were terrified. You know, our manager at the last station said, "Just don't go up there and screw it up." So that was our goal.
Yeah.
Is to not mess it up. But when we got up here, because the expectations in radio and any business for that matter are pretty high when you got something as successful as this station was, but Bobby somehow made it seem like it's okay if you make some mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And we did, and he used to hotline us almost every morning listening to the show. Here, every radio station has a hotline that only the people who work there can get through on. He hotlined us all the time. Usually it was to encourage us or say something, but occasionally it was to chew us out. "I can't believe you just did that. Don't do that again."
Yeah.
Or whatever. But he was just one of those guys who you didn't have to worry about, like you had mentioned before, Howie. We didn't have to worry about getting fired when Bobby was around. We knew we might get chewed out.
Right.
And get encouragement, but we didn't worry about that.
He was our biggest fan,
yeah.
Though. Like you said, he would call up on the hotline and go, "That phone funny was the funniest thing I ever heard."
Yeah.
You know, and or he'd be at a convenience store and he said, "Hey, I'm over here at the Weigels. You know, they're listening to you this morning."
And he was proud of you when he went out somewhere with you, almost like a dad. When we first got here, and this is before we even knew Bobby very well, but every time we went somewhere, we felt like he was parading us to somebody and going and bragging on us.
Well, he would always put Andy on the spot and say, "Andy, be funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do that voice, Andy.
Bobby, be funny.
You know, it's the mayor. I don't know these people yet. But I mean, that was just his way. So
that was the big part of it. And being in that stadium tomorrow, there are going to be a lot of people who will be making that transition. This morning, probably the most difficult part of doing this was hearing Bobby's voice, actually, the clips that we played. And going to the stadium, that was part of my experience, just like you, Jeff. And I can only imagine what it will be like for you because, A, it's the absence of that voice. But for me, for everybody here that works in radio that's done anything, once you get your set patterns, you sit in a certain chair, you wear certain headphones, you have this person to the right of you, this person to the left of you, you have your world the way it is. You're about to change chairs, sir, and you're gonna sit in a different seat, and you could move 3 feet, and it changes your world. You're going to sit in a different seat. You're going to hear the replacement voice is going to be yours. So you're not only going to deal with missing Bobby, you're going to deal with hearing your voice in the place of his. And the whole stadium, you know how this town is. I remember when Bob Kesling took over for John Ward.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's not out of any disrespect for you at all. It's out of their love and attachment for these people that are markers of tradition. And that's a big deal.
Sure, it's a big deal.
I think you're scaring him.
I think you got a little lightheaded.
Yeah, his face just turned white.
I was just looking at the clock going, is he going to give me time to answer?
I was going to wait until the last 15 seconds and say good luck.
Yes. The more you talk, the more nervous I get. I've always liked the challenge. I mean, and that would be an honest statement, and I can't think of a bigger one. I mean, I can't. And I talked to Bob about coming in behind because he's the one person that I can really say would have any feel for what this feels like. I mean, there's not that many people I can go to and have this conversation, you know. And Bob was very supportive, and I mean, his advice was be yourself.
Yep.
You know, that's what he goes. I'm telling you right now, Bobby would tell you be yourself, and. That's all I can do. And yes, I know there will be people. It's funny because everybody's been supportive at this point.
Right.
And I talk at this point, Keith, right? And I said, we'll find out Monday. Right now, I've been the backup quarterback and everybody loves the backup quarterback. We'll see Monday. There'll be some that, you know, that's different. I don't like that as much. And I know that. The good news is I'm thick skinned and I'm also thick headed. So, I mean, those go together pretty well.
So let me just say this on behalf of Bobby. Mickey is here. If Bobby were here and he couldn't do it and you were his replacement on Tuesday, he'd smoke a cigar with you and tell you you're fine. He had that ability to tell you, don't listen to the critics. You be yourself and go forward. We lost him. I thought we were going to be able to talk to Tim Berry for just a moment. This has been a wonderful time of remembering a legend in our Coliseum. Neyland Stadium, Bobby Denton's voice rang out there, and I'm going to miss him.
I got one message for Bobby. In the last 5 years, I missed 2 games, road games, not watching it with him at his house. Most of the time, it was just Bobby and me. I don't have to tell you what our record was watching games together in the last 5 years on the road. He really thought that Butch Jones was the guy to get it turned around, and I know that he'll be watching in about 3 weeks when we go to Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Hey, Alan, I want to add one thing here. There's only one guy, I think, who's seen every Tennessee home opener since 1946, and that's Gus Manning. This will be his 69th home opener.
Wow.
That means he's gone through every PA announcer and every student SID that I was. So I think we ought to congratulate Gus on that to go along with the 54 years of the locker room.
All right.
Yeah. Gus, we'll give you the final word. Gus, what are your final words this morning?
My final words is Bud said the same thing I told him to say.
Bobby Denton, we love you. We will never forget you. Your legacy lives on. Jeff Jardigan, we support you. Go Vols.
Hearing Bobby on game days has been an awesome Tennessee tradition, but knowing Bobby in person was the real honor and a blessing. Sunday night, for the first time in 48 years, Bobby won't be in the PA booth. But we all know he'll be there in spirit, from a booth that's even higher. Orange on, cigar in hand, in classic Bobby style.
How about that, baby?